What do you make of the Oilers in a rare week-long break? The Jets will be playing their third game in 4 nights tomorrow. Is there any advantage, Edmonton?
Well, you're rested and you should be fresh, but it's funny, that doesn't always mean you're going to come out and just with all kinds of energy in the first period, does it? Sometimes it means you're flat for some reason. So I think if you're the Oilers, you take whatever advantage you can get with the break. If you're the Winnipeg Jets, you try and take advantage of the fact that you're playing lots of games and feeling it. I don't know if it's a big advantage. I mean, you're probably healthier overall as a group than the other team. I'd say that's probably the main advantage. The bumps and bruises and the day-to-day things that guys are playing through, the Oilers are going to be in better shape.
Speaking of the Jets, Adam Lowry, 5-year extension today worth $3.25 million. I like Adam Lowry a lot, but anytime there's term of 5 years for a bottom six guy, it's like I'm trying to think which bottom six player had a 5-year deal that really worked out.
I don't know. I would need to think about that for a little bit. He's how old is he? He's 27, isn't he?
Yeah, he'll be 28 next year.
28 next year?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm a fan. I believe the Oilers would have been heavily pursuing him in the offseason had he not re-signed. I think that's a player that they would have had lots of interest in. It would be my guess. So I think that's Winnipeg realizing, look, that's a big guy that plays the game with some compete, does a lot of things the right way, adds value. Winning teams have an element like Adam Lowry on their roster. And if he's under $3.5 million and can play in your top nine and is a center, well, I think you're probably okay. I don't know. I didn't mind the signing. Maybe a year too long, but he's going to be a good player for another 3-4 years, I would say.
Okay.
You didn't like it? You thought
No. Like I said, I don't mind the contract at all. But I would say I'm bordering on anti-term. Term is usually what screws you for players. So
no,
I get it for
anti-term.
Teams.
100% you are. You're not bordering on anything.
That's what screws teams over, especially for UFA contracts. I get term on young players. I get it. That makes sense. Term on older players? Like, look at Zach Kassian. If Zach Kassian was a 3-year deal instead of a 4-year deal, the cap hit rarely crushes you as much as the term, unless you can convince a guy to sign like a 7-year deal for 1.5. Then you're like, well, whatever. I can figure that out because for the most part, if the last 3 years suck, I just put him in the minors and it barely counts as anything. But, you know, I like Adam Lowry. I like him a lot as a player. But 5-year term is risky for bigger guys like that. It just is.
So he'll be 32, 33 when this thing ends?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's getting to the age where guys definitely start to slow down, and for sure. But, I mean, I don't know. Like, if you want people to sign for your hockey team, it has to make sense to them. Someone was giving him 5 years in free agency. He was getting that number in free agency that he got today, no question about it. So the Jets just decided to give him that number. Because if they don't give it to Adam Lowry, guess what? Now they're out shopping in that same free agent pond that would have given Adam Lowry the term and the dollar that they decided to give him. So if you think you're going to go get an equal player for less term and money, you're being silly. You know what I mean? Like, he would have gotten that in free agency. I'd bet my house on it.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure he might have. Yeah,
so if you choose not to give him the term, what are you doing? Who's going to play in that spot?
Well, I'll ask you this way, Ryan. The LA Kings chose not to give Milan Lucic the term because someone would do it. Does that mean it's the right? So who made the right decision? The Oilers for signing Milan Lucic or the Kings for not?
Well, not every situation is equal. You got to make the decision based on, first of all, the term, and second of all, the direction you think the player's heading in. So it's all risk-reward. Giving Milan Lucic the term in dollars that he was given was a massive risk. Everybody knew it. The day the deal was signed, everybody went, ooh, those last whatever number of years are going to be rough. I don't know that on a 5-year deal with Adam Lowry, it's a lock guarantee that, oh boy, 2 years of that are going to be really rough. You know what I mean? Like, it's not one size fits all. For a certain type of player, you're safer giving him term. And it just depends on how much. So I just think you can't be afraid of giving guys contracts that are going to, you know, buy the cap value down a little bit and take a bit of risk on what they're going to look like. I agree, you don't want to get yourself into a bad situation. But I don't know. I don't view this as super high risk, a contract.
Yeah, I never said it was super high risk. I just think in an ideal world, I'd have a four-year term. Term's the only issue I have with this. I like Adam Lowry as a player. He's had a breakout year this season. But there's lots of big guys like that who have breakout years. And then all of a sudden, you know, a few years down the road, it's one where you're like, whew, it could be tough. Hopefully for him, it isn't. It's a good signing for the Jets for the next few seasons, no question. We'll see where it goes from there, which leads to the orders. So they got Lowry down the middle. They got Scheifele down the middle. And they got Stastny down the middle right now. So do you think you will have McDavid and Draisaitl down the middle tomorrow night?
I think he needs to. Yeah, I think you got to split those guys up and play it separately. He wasn't going to give it all away in his media availability today. Like, Matty was pecking around that a little bit, and he's not going to say much right now, but I would think that he'll play those guys separately. If you don't, I just don't think you match up very well, and you're relying on one line to carry the mail in a way that, you know, I'm not sure that that's with the other next two centers you got coming over the boards against those guys. I just don't know if that's going to work. So I think he'll separate them. What do you think?
Well, I would think so. He did it against Calgary, so I'm going to guess that he might. But if he does, I'm curious who he's going to play on the left wing with, I guess they could just recall Ennis, right? Because they just sent him down. So
that would be the guy.
Right. That's probably the guy they would do it with, I think, for a game or two and kind of see how it goes. And Nugent Hopkins obviously will miss this game. And, you know, I kind of have a sneaking suspicion that he's not going to play on Monday either, but we'll see.
Maybe you bounce up Archibald again, too. Like, he has a tendency to, you know, lean towards Archibald when it's, you know, in situations like this where at least you know you'll get some skating and some hitting and you know, a guy that's reasonably reliable, which I know will make people cringe. But, you know, Ennis or Archibald, I would say, is probably where the direction that he goes in. It's not ideal, man. Like, this is a good indication. When you don't have Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, not only is it harder to play McDavid and Draisaitl together, but you're super thin on the wing. It hurts you in kind of a couple of different ways when you don't have that player available. Like, he gives some versatility to that lineup in a few different ways. So, again, the benefit of being able to have a guy as a top six winger who also has the ability to play center when you have that nuclear option you can go to in McDavid and Draisaitl. It's so much harder to go to when you don't have a legitimate number two center coming over the boards next.
Ryan Rashog from TSN joins us. Shogger got some help from Sports Logic today and put out, you know, passing numbers and carrying zone exits and defensive denials and, you know, zone battles and things.
Yeah, I saw the article. It was great.
There's some stats that really kind of stood out to me a little bit. Number one, that Chris Russell is that good at he does it that often at zone exits. I don't, like, Nurse is the guy that I, you know, he carries the puck lots. Barry does it a fair amount, but I didn't know that Chris Russell did it that often and was that effective at it.
Yeah, for sure. There's definitely some interesting stuff in there. I don't know. I mean, I see a lot of people trying to throw numbers around that justify Tyson Barrie kind of being no big deal. And I just have trouble with that that argument.
Yeah,
you know, that he hasn't helped notably in any way. That's the argument that people make, is that it's like, other people can do what he does.
Yeah.
And I just have trouble with that. I don't understand that when other people have had lots of opportunity to do that, and they haven't really. Like, Klefbom was good on the power play for sure, but Tyson Barrie passes the puck. He's a combination of a guy that can pass the puck in a way that keeps it heading in the right direction. He's a fantastic passer. He just is. He's one of their best, if not their best. And he gels with the power play. There's a compete level with him. He's another high end defenseman with which you can't have enough of. I just don't understand the idea that having Tyson Barrie just disappear off your roster and thinking you have anything they can backfill with that will just get the job done and they won't skip a beat. I just don't understand how you can process that logically. I don't know. Isn't another really good defenseman on top of Darnell Nurse a really positive thing? I'm not expecting Klefbom to be an Oiler next year. I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
So,
One of the big arguments, people think that Ethan Bear can do more because he's better defensively than Barry. And if you want to say that Bear is better defensively, I'm not going to argue with that. But
Sure.
Is Ethan Bear like I look at it this way. Okay, so let's say Ethan Bear is better defensively. I'll give you that. But Tyson Barrie is a top 10 point producing defenseman. Now, this year, people are wanting to use his second assists and everything against him, and that's fine. To me, I think it's a little bit of cherry picking, but that's okay.
Well, for sure it's cherry picking. When you normally pass the puck to forwards who then pass it to other forwards.
Yeah. Now,
didn't ever pass it to a forward, then it wouldn't be able to happen, right?
Yeah, I know. It's just because his is a little bit higher this year than usual.
Sure.
So I get it. They want to jump on one thing. But here's my thing. It's been 8 years, and he's actually seventh over the last 8 years, but he's fifth over the last 4 years in points. And so it's where some people now want to use the public data of scoring chances and expected goals on Natural Stat Trick are somehow more vital and give you a better story of what actual goals are. And that's where, and I keep asking this question, and none of the stats guys that I asked to ever give me an answer. How do you take a scoring chance and what's the value to that to an actual goal? Because if you have somebody who's more involved in goals, which last I checked are the most impactful one on your team, and just because you think scoring percentages are going to be this over time, that doesn't mean they will. So I'd like to know what that combination is, and I've never seen one.
Yeah, and I guess another part of the equation, too, is like, you know, all these numbers, you can parse this data and pull all these numbers through the course of 20, 30, 40, 50 games, and it's, you know, it's available through Natural Stat Trick, and, you know, I get it, and there's value in some of these things, for sure, and I don't want to discredit, like, all of it, but... Like, you know, what's not factored in, like, and I'll just use his name. Jonathan Willis wrote an article about this recently, and I like John's stuff. But I find what's not factored in is the commentary that, you know, Tyson Barrie is a veteran. And Tyson Barrie has been in different situations. He's brings a veteran presence. He's a phenomenal presence in that locker room. He's made other players around him better. He's raised other people's level. Darnell Nurse having the best year he's ever had has to, in some part, have something to do with playing with a partner the quality of Tyson Barrie. I would say that it would, and I think Nurse would say that it would. And he's competitive. There's a compete level in this player that's going to matter in the playoffs. So where do you stack that in and say, where has Ethan Bear, what in his experience shows he's going to be capable of that when it matters? What an Evan Bouchard development has given you any indication he's going to be capable of any of that when it matters? Tyson Barrie is a veteran NHL defenseman, one of the better point-producing defensemen we've seen over the last 4 or 5 years, on a team that's desperately needed more production from the blue line and is finally getting it. So I just don't understand why you're searching so hard through data to find reasons when really the obvious stuff is just kind of sitting right there. Yet that's not really talked about. You know, this player knows what he's doing. He's competitive. He knows how to put up points with whoever he's playing with. Of course, he could be better in his own end. Most dynamic offensive NHL defensemen are like that, but he's aware of it. I believe he works on it, but he's competitive. And I think in a playoff series, you're going to be able to depend on this player. I just think that matters. So we'll see. We'll see, and he needs to have a good playoff, and he needs to play well, and I don't think they should unload a dump truck full of money and way overpay him. But if Tyson Barrie is available to re-sign at a fair market deal, to suggest you don't need him to me is just head-scratching.
Dude, I'm totally with you. I'm rather, like, if you want to say, hey, Tyson Barrie, I don't want him on the ice when I'm protecting a one-goal lead for the final 2 minutes,
sure.
I'm going to agree with you 100%. It's funny how that, he's not valuable to your team now because he can't do that. I'm like, well, if he was on the ice to get you into the lead, is that not, like, that's not important now? It's only the guy who protects the lead? Like, because someone's saying, well, he doesn't play on the penalty kill. Yeah, you're right, he doesn't. But Ethan Bear doesn't play in the power play. And when he does, he's not a Barrie. Like, he's never put up the numbers. And
right.
I'm not sure he ever will. Because the other thing is, like, so far, Ethan Bear hasn't shown you he skates as well as Tyson Barrie.
Well, no. He doesn't rush the puck as well. He doesn't move as well this year. He doesn't walk the blue line in a dynamic way with a nose for getting pucks on net at all times. He doesn't uncork a one-timer that makes you go, whoa. He doesn't... No, Ethan Bear is nowhere near the hemisphere of offensive player that Tyson Barrie is. Why are we even talking about that? Like, that makes no sense. That's not who he is. So let's not say that Tyson Barrie's offense isn't necessary because Ethan Bear is sitting there. Bear has lots of strengths, and he's a really valuable player, and absolutely. But it boggles my mind that people go, well, they don't need Tyson Berry. They've got Ethan Bear and Evan Bouchard. What has Evan Bouchard done? It's going to take this player a long time to contribute consistently in the best league in the world. And he's barely gotten started. He's barely scratched the surface to just being able to play the game in the league every night. So to say, oh, one of the most dynamic offensive defensemen in the league is no longer necessary because, look, it's head-scratching. And I say this respectfully. Like, John made lots of good points in his article, and I like his stuff, but sometimes you wrap yourself in knots with numbers trying to figure something out when it's just obvious. Don't give him $9 million a year, of course not. But if you can get him at a fair market value contract to suggest that he shouldn't be a priority, I don't get it.
Ron Rashog from TSN. Shagar, I'm totally with you. Quickly, you see the Oilers' schedule changed again, but this schedule is a little bit better for them because now they're only going to Vancouver once instead of twice, and they'll just play both games back-to-back. They didn't add an extra back-to-back because they took out the Montreal back-to-back. So their season just extends another few days, but their schedule doesn't become any more condensed at all.
Yeah, and that's good. I mean, you always wonder when you get games pulled out from underneath you, you think, okay, more of a break now, but boy, this is going to come back and bite you. I mean, that's the thing. Sure, they'll take the break in Montreal, though that was a pain in the butt. They'll take the break and they'll rest up their bumps and bruises, but you're sitting there going, oh, what's this going to look like on the other end? We're going to get killed. I mean, look what the Canucks were just faced with. So if it can be spread out a little bit where they don't, and the other thing too, Greg, is right before the playoffs. If it's all going to get jammed right before the playoffs where you got to play a ridiculous string of games just to get your 56 in, and you hit the playoffs after a ridiculous stretch, that's not doing you any good at all. So the more they can stretch it out, the better for this team. They want to be rested, but they want to be playing enough hockey to hit a groove. Right now, they are not in a groove at all. There's none of that going on. There's no mojo. There's no nothing because they haven't been playing enough hockey. So they got their rest. They need to turn that into finding their groove now and keep that rolling through whatever the schedule throws at them for the next 5 weeks.
Shagar, enjoy the game. We will talk to you on Monday. Have a good one.
Okay, sounds good, pal. Have a great weekend.